You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Corporate taxation is one of the thorniest issues in international economic policy. Janet Yellen, US President Joe Biden's Treasury Secretary and a former head of the Fed, weighed in when she grabbed the attention of the occupants of corner offices worldwide with a speech to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs earlier this month. The headline was a call for countries to agree on a global minimum tax rate for large companies. And such a levy, Yellen said, would help make sure that the global economy thrives based on a more level playing field and would help end a 30-year race to the bottom. Though the idea of a minimum tax raises hackles in tax havens in the Caribbean and parts of Europe and farther afield, many other big economies will welcome America's renewed commitment, at least to multilateralism on tax after the prickly unilateralism of the Trump years. Over the past decade, growing corporate tax avoidance has met with a growing backlash. We've seen breakneck globalization allowing multinationals to replace fears of double taxation with the joys of double non-taxation, using havens to game the system. And by exploiting mismatches between countries' tax laws, taxable profits could be cut or even made to disappear. And the game became easier with the rise of intangible assets, which can be shifted between jurisdictions more easily than buildings or machinery. And big tech has been a big beneficiary of all of this. The five largest Silicon Valley giants paid $220 billion in cash taxes over the past decade, just 16% of the cumulative pre-tax profits. And numerous sets of talks aimed at resolving the problem have been held under the auspices of the OECD, which is a club of mostly rich countries. Progress, however, has been slow. Frustrated by dozens of countries from Belgium and Britain to India and Indonesia have introduced or proposed digital service taxes, or DSTs, on the local sales of foreign firms with online platforms. So it's an important issue to consider for us here in South Africa. Let's welcome our panel to discuss what this now means for the fiscus and also for tax policy in the country. We're joined by SARS Commissioner Edward Keyswetter, Judge Dennis Davis, who's head of the Davis Tax Committee, and Keith Engel, the Chief Executive of the SA Institute of Tax Professionals. And Keith, also well known for his leading roles in the formulation of tax legislation at Treasury in the 2000s. Welcome to the show, chaps. Judge Davis, over the past decade, we've seen growing corporate tax avoidance driven by well-known international economic factors meeting with growing public backlash. It's an understandable moral clarity here. Apart from the loss of revenue, there is this idea that some companies are just not paying their fair share, hence this renewed debate on a global minimum corporate tax rate. However, accepting that there is a real problem about the erosion of domestic tax bases, the question is how the various competing national interests can negotiate a sensible compromise here by June of this year, given the complexities. Is this unrealistic?
It's a hugely difficult question to answer in 2 minutes, because it seems to me, you're right, if we could get a minimum corporate tax rate, that would help countries. It would help developing countries, I might add, because if you could assume that you got a rate which was suitable for all countries, it would mean an absence of tax arbitrage. It would essentially make it much more difficult to up the cost, or in fact the use of tax havens and the various forms of sophisticated transfer pricing. But I suspect that this will be led by the United States. If the Biden administration can actually push this through, it'll have a huge effect. I mean, we're not going to be able to do it. Obviously, we're a developing country. But if, for example, the United States is able to, as it were, elbow other countries into an agreement, I couldn't think of a better way of actually reducing the kind of base erosion and profit shifting that the OECD has been anxious about for all that time. And you may remember actually produced a series of comprehensive reports to that effect. And it would advantage us, because we would then slipstream through that particular position, and we wouldn't be in a position whereby we'd be having to lower our rates in order to compete with other countries. Having said that, let me make one other point. Of course, our problem isn't necessarily only the nominal rate, it's the effective rate. I mean, I've always thought to myself, what's the point of having a nominal rate of 28 or 27% when you're only collecting 16 or 17%? So, but if there was a minimum rate, and therefore you couldn't park your profits in country A in order, as it were, to diminish the returns of company B, that itself would help in relation to closing that gap.
A very complex issue, and beautifully summed up in the beginning there, Judge Davis. There are so many different factors and competing interests at a sovereign and fiscal level. To set a minimum, and Commissioner Keyes-Wetter, to bring you in here, that is really where the challenge must lie now, surely, to say, well, what is that minimum? Because there are different fiscal and sovereign requirements in all the countries around the table. So to set a minimum that's going to suit all of those seems like a Sisyphean task.
I think the notion of a minimum rate can stand on its own merit, Michael. But the problem globally is not about tax rates. It's about compliance levels. It's about the extent to which companies arbitrage tax laws and rates, whatever they are. And if we just take the South African experience, we come from an era where there was a time when, for example, the financial services industry, regardless of the rate, and at the time I think the rate was 34% in South Africa, the effective tax rate for some banks was zero. The banking and financial sector as a sector, the effective tax rate was around about 3-4%. So whatever the minimum rate is, if you are a minimum rate doctrinaire, the more important question is, what are the level of arbitrage by companies? And our minister has been very clear that he wants to lower the rates. Directionally, he says we want to at least move towards the low 20s, which is the OECD level. And the quid pro quo, though, is you have to broaden the base and you have to address the issues that erodes the tax base for developing countries. And I think we can unpack that further. And so I don't think it is necessarily an issue about what should the minimum rate be, but it's about the system that makes up of which policies and rates and rate differentials is only one area of the debate. The more complex areas, it's outside of what the rate is.
Absolutely, and we'll come back to what these issues are that are preventing us from widening and expanding that tax base so we can reach that target of the lower 20s that the finance minister has established in terms of a path. Keith, after all of the horse trading, the expected rate is expected to be a little more than the Irish rate of around 12.5% from the research that I've done. And that's a little more than American tech firms pay anyway. So what would be achieved if we were to go along this path of a global minimum, considering that?
Well, look, I think to be fair, the global minimum rate they're talking about is an effective rate. So what's been going on is the OECD has been pushing this minimum rate concept for a while. But when you had the Trump administration, you didn't know what was going on. Let's just leave it there. So there was a lot of fight. Once Biden came into the process, he's now jumped back in and said, well, I want it to be 21% because now they want to protect the higher U.S. corporate rate. But my gut is going to tell me that the rate choices are going to be 10, 12 and a half or 15. Now, some people say, well, that's not enough. Let me say, I think that it will help a lot. I'm not saying it's a panacea. I would agree with the commissioner. It's not. But usually when people are playing games, they love zero. That's what I've seen in my life. They love zero. That's where I'm willing to spend all the money for the law firms and the accounting firms to get me through. And our problem is with the goal of the regime, and it's really coming out of the OECD, the US is just upping the rate, is they're going after an effective rate and they want to see an effective rate of a certain amount. OEC will be 10 or 12 and a half or 15. Maybe the number will be 15 at the end of the day. US is also going for an effective rate. Is that what you're trying to do is if you are outside of that and you're below the effective rate, say Dubai, then anyone dealing with them is going to have the anti-avoidance rules that are going to kick in. So if the country doesn't comply, it's going to be subject to a lot of anti-avoidance rules when you deal with them. And that means effectively countries are doing countermeasures. So this goes back to what you're really worried about is a harmful tax practice. And every country worries about these. So you've got to worry about Mauritius, you worry about Dubai, we worry about Switzerland, Netherlands, Luxembourg. I mean, remember when I was back in the Treasury, that's where the big numbers were going, all off to Europe. And so if you bring those rates up, you take a lot of the incentive out. And the bottom line is, with a minimum rate, it's a simple method of doing it. We do have a lot of rules to stop avoidance, but a lot of them are too complicated. So it will help, but I agree it will not curb everything. But it does make a difference. So, for example, Starbucks and a lot of them, they didn't want the 12.5 Irish rate. They wanted the zero rate by special ruling. If you watch them, they never went for that. They always go for the zero. So it will mitigate, but it will, and probably mitigate quite a bit, but it will not stop everything.
So the bigger question then is how do we stop companies gaming the system to zero effectively? But I want to come back, Judge Davis, to the point about cartels or being inside or outside of a club. For those countries that remain outside of any deal here, the benefits expand as more countries sign up to whatever that global minimum is. And so it almost creates this reinforcing mechanism for those havens not to join. That is a real challenge here. How can that be overcome?
Well, that's going to depend again on the question of the pressure that is put on those countries by the lot of countries, such as the United States, etc. That was how, there is some precedent for this, because the exchange of information agreements that have been taking place, which essentially put a lot of pressure on these smaller places to come to the party. You know, there was a time when you could literally park your money in Jersey or Guernsey with impunity, and slowly these countries were brought into the net. You're going to need the same level of political pressure. But I agree, it's not easy. Let's be honest about it in a slightly different context. We've seen how difficult it is to get Dubai to actually do anything about extradition of a well-known family. in circumstances where I'm quite sure Commissioner Kiesvetter wouldn't mind auditing them, because he may well find himself with a surplus. I'm not trying to be funny about it. I'm saying that's the difficulty you've got, Michael, is that there will be outliers. And so the question is, will we be able, if there's going to be a minimum wage, and Keith is right, the American proposal of 21% isn't going to fly. I'm sure of that. But even we had it 15 or 16 or whatever it may be, you're still going to get the outliers. And then the question is, if you can get the agreement for 15 and 16, what pressure will be put on those countries? And I'm afraid I'm not sanguine about that. I mean, I'm not sanguine that you know, some of these outlying countries will not think it's their benefit just to hold out.
Yep.
So that require the level of unity of purpose from the other countries to say, if you don't do that, we are going to have to take very serious steps against.
Commissioner, if you look at it, the OECD, I've got a number in front of me, estimates that corporate profit shifting robs ministers of finance between 100 to 240 billion US dollars a year. I mean, that is a staggering figure. And if you look at the global minimum tax, I've read figures of only about $10 billion being clawed back here. So really the bigger issue is to tackle profit shifting. I mean, what would you like to see, and what are you focusing on here to ensure that you can tackle this as the receiver?
Oh, and I mean, just to finish off on the minimum rate issue, and which is why I say it's the wrong issue for me. I mean, if you think about a simple equation, that's the numerator. And no matter what the numerator is, the manipulation is taking place on the denominator, the thing called taxable income. And if you lower the rate, those companies who still want to pay less will just work harder at the manipulation of the denominator. And that's what we see in base erosion and profit shifting just over the last 2 years in South Africa. And this, remember, is with our limited capability. We have conducted almost 100 audits of South African taxpayers on base erosion, which includes transfer pricing and international of international companies on corporate income tax, and raised an assessment of 10 billion. And I think that's just scratching the surface. And you see all kinds of things to manipulate the denominator. You see, for example, in the motor industry, we have this wonderful thing called the MIDP, and it's worked amazing for South Africa, and you'd think that's sufficient incentive. Yet we see companies inflating import costs, okay? And they inflate the import cost because they're trying to arbitrage the tax that is payable on goods that they import. We see companies on export overstating export values because they're trying to arbitrage the VAT, zero VAT rates on goods that you export. We see the misstatement of value add where you have offshore passive treasuries where no work is really done. We see shifting from into havens like countries like Singapore and Switzerland, where no real economic value is created, yet there is the abuse of transfer pricing practices between offshore parent companies and subsidiary companies. So we must not make this a debate between villains and saints, where we characterize governments and tax authorities as the villains and all companies as saints. I think until we make it an our problem and we look together, we can achieve the ambition set out by the minister that says we can lower the rates. And there should be no minimum rate, in fact, to where we can theoretically go if we are able to collect all the taxes that are due, which means you broaden the base to include those who should be included and you address those issues that arbitrage the actual taxable income so that companies actually don't pay the true measure of their tax by misstating or aggressively eroding the tax base within a local jurisdiction. And South Africa has lost tens of billions through those practices.
Commissioner, what is the large business unit that you resuscitated now doing to get ahead of this? Are you getting the skills back in to fully capacitate that unit to scratch beneath the surface, if you're just scratching the surface right now?
Well, I think the 100 audits that I have shared with you over the last 2 years is in fact the start of that journey. But we should be conducting significantly more because I think we are literally just scratching the surface. So to your specific point, Michael, you have seen us in the media in the last month advertising some high specialist positions because we do believe we have to invest in three areas. Firstly, we have to expand and really focus on the use of data because in the world where we are now, if you don't have the proper data, a full set of complete data, we have lots of data, but we need to expand that. And then also be building the capability through machine learning algorithms to understand that data and to make better an analysis from that data. The second is obviously building an enabling environment using technology. And the third is deepening our human capability that can apply their mind. At the moment, our human capability is often just directed at filling up a spreadsheet or an Excel spreadsheet to get the information. All of those things should be seamless, and we use the human brilliance to actually apply the mind and to try and understand the schemes and the arrangements that is available. We have a long way to go. We certainly won't declare victory very soon.
Keith, from your vantage point, I mean, just to maybe shift the conversation a little to the digital service tax, how do you see any conversation around a move towards a global minimum tax rate impact with a digital service tax, because we've already seen this introduced or imposed by the likes of the UK and Belgium and India. And if we look at the local sales of foreign firms with online platforms, is there a risk here of this just ending up in a form of double taxation?
Yeah, well, there are different things you're raising. There's been a battle between two things. There's a minimum tax rate and there's been an anti-avoidance push. They call that Pillar 2 in the OECD world, where what you're trying to do is go after the harmful tax jurisdictions where they have zero tax or nominal tax rate. The second battle that's going on is whose tax it is. So with the issue of digital and fast consumer moving goods is the income of the producer country or the consumer country? And that battle is going on between the US and Europe, because the Europeans are saying we're consuming US goods and we want some of the income tax allocated to Europe. And the counter by the US has been, well, it's a consumption tax, you have the consumption tax method. So that battle is going on, and where with the US government was originally rejecting everything the Europeans were saying, now the US have said only the top 100 companies, that it doesn't matter whether you're digital, consumer, fast producing goods, that we're willing to reallocate income toward consumption for the top 100. I don't think any of that's going to affect Africa very much. And even under the European proposals, the Treasury did do some studies, and informally what they told us is the amount of money they're going to get there is not going to be very high. But what you will see, and I think that's some of the concern that's going to happen, is on the one hand, you've got gaps in the system and people are trying to close it. And you have a number of taxpayers who are questionable, okay? You have a number of other taxpayers who are honest paying taxpayers. And in the world where we have a breakdown in the consensus, and there's an increasing rise of double taxation. So some countries have already jumped ahead with digital service tax, such as Kenya, such as France. So you will see a rising of double taxation, which is going to be a problem. I guess it'll start prohibiting trade. Mm. That would be the concern. If it's misapplied.
And just in conclusion, Judge Davis, if we were to look at what are the existing mechanisms, short of a global minimum tax, what are some perhaps legitimate tax cooperation deals or agreements that could be strengthened to deal with this issue? Or is this a losing battle between the forces of globalization and the forces of technology on the one hand and the needs of tax gatherers on the other?
There are a number of points. I haven't got enough time to get through all of them. I think Let me make an overall point. I think we're at an inflection point, Michael, in relation to the question of the way the trajectory of economic activity around the world is going to go. Are we going to become more nationalistic, or are we going to become more global? That is, I think, the significant consequence of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I am hopeful that, in a sense, we will not draw in, but we'll realize that we have to cooperate with each other, just like this virus essentially transcends national borders. So obviously, the kind of exchange of information agreements and the OECD suggestions, recommendations from some while back are a sort of roadmap, if you wish, to where we might want to go. But I think the Commission is also right. You're always going to have very significant national capacity. And the start that has really started at SARS, not just started, I think that's unfair, much more than just a start, turn to ensuring that SARS gets into the right direction in relation to particular issues evident already. It was, how do you explain 38 billion additional rand in very difficult circumstances? Mm-hmm. So what I'm encouraged by is many of the recommendations that we've been making at the DTC and others, which they have dealt with, are beginning to bear fruit. And you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to ensure a policing of the way in which taxable income is effectively submitted in a national context, which puts an onus on national tax authorities, which is why we should all be cheering SARS when it actually makes the kind of progress it's making at present.
Absolutely, and a good point that you raise there about that collection surprising on the upside. Commissioner, I'll leave you with the last word then. From that broad view of a kind of tax morality, are you starting to see an improvement there? Because for many years under the state capture years in particular, that breakdown of the contract between the taxpayer and the state led to a declining tax morality. Taxpayers just didn't want to pay over money that they saw wasted or pilfered. Are you seeing that turn?
I think we are beginning to see encouraging signs of a turnaround, Michael. But we are far from the kind of progress that we can make for a number of reasons. Let me just say very quickly, in the broader socio-political, there's still a breakdown in confidence. There's questions about the social contract between the citizen and government. And so that affects tax morality as well, because we're part of government. But I think increasingly, our message to taxpayers is, we want to make it easier for you. And if you work with us, then we will reduce your burden of compliance. But if you don't, then you ignore the law at your peril. And I think it's going to be a compounding rather than a linear improvement. And hopefully, as Judge Davis had also said, we're beginning to lay down the foundational planks on which we can grow and improve not just the efficiency of SARS, but also improve the morality and the social contract between us and the taxpaying public.
Important points, those. Thank you very much for your time. SARS Commissioner Edward Keysweater, joined around the table by Judge Dennis Davis, head of the Davis Tax Committee, and Keith Engel, CEO of the South African Institute of Tax Professionals, talking about this issue of a global minimum tax rate and this relentless race to the bottom. Is it likely to succeed? Well, you be the judge.